Hi there, this is Sean Kennedy. The following episode of Tales from the Aftermath, episode 16, is dedicated to Art Lindsay Jr., the infamous smokehouse of Rant Radio, for his tireless efforts in making our community what it is. Well, with the antenna I got built here, I don't imagine you're going to be having much problems receiving this broadcast. And this is Independent Librarian Dynamic, Sean Kennedy VI, doing a pirate broadcast of episode number 732.653.663.398.36.16. It's a broadcast in Queen's English from sometime after now. That would be your now, not necessarily my now. But when we start talking about time travel, things get a little bit weird. This broadcast is made by myself. It's transmitted to another location, which accelerates the frequency so that it travels back in time so that you can listen to it. Even still, by listening to this broadcast, laws that haven't been created yet, you may be violating. You'll be violating the eventual listener's license, the license that all the core politicals put into place so that they could control what you see, hear, watch, all your sources of information, as well as to protect their profits. You'll be violating your creativity permits, which are issued and actually have to be requisitioned for, so if they don't like what you're going to be creating, then it won't be created. All art here is sanctioned. As a matter of fact, art is here considered the most dangerous of criminals, right next to, of course, people such as myself, the librarians, who have absolutely no regard whatsoever for copyright law. By violating either your listener's license or your creativity permit, you may be subject to manual termination or forced recycling. And if these laws haven't been created yet, you can do what you can to stop them from being created by being aware, because they're coming. If this broadcast should shock or disturb you, then you're the one who should listen because you need it most. You're the one who I'm broadcasting to. This is a broadband transmission to try to correct the future. So light your candles. May server protect us all. I've been traveling in the desert, and after I met Ikubi, he led me to this radio tower, well, this spike out in the desert. Shortwave radio transmissions are a thing of the past. Not many people use these towers anymore because they're too easy to find. They're not mobile. But the spikes are still out here. Slang term for these towers because of the antennas they would use. Once I was here, it took me a while to jerry-rig up the antenna. It was a antenna itself had a bend because of the wind in it, but I just had to straighten that out. Took me a few hours. Wasn't that hard. Found out these cybernetic legs I have are pretty good at climbing. Especially, metal slotted items. I suppose, being as they're reconnaissance legs, they should be used for, climbing over obstacles and stuff. I've left my helmet off. The recon helmet, so that my Dreadman signals can be interpreted, give my brain a chance to get used to it. There's not many signals out here, but it's interesting when I correct the tower and I look at it. I'm wondering if it's working properly just by seeing how it's arranged and making sure it's isolated properly. The tower takes on a weird light. It totally eliminates the need for me to do any troubleshooting with the antenna because I can see that the antenna is picking up signals. It's kind of cool. Radio tower, after it got fixed, took me a little while to try to scope in and get signal. I had to wait until the nighttime again, well, just at sunset, so that the sky cleared out and I could get a clear signal. And I climbed as high as I could in the antenna and made a little directional port, which is pretty easy. Make a directional antenna. It's not like I said before, the most kids in the past knew how to carve or maybe, you know, make a coat hanger and use it to get keys out of a car. Just about every kid knows how to do that or to boost a car or what have you. But out here, you learn how to do things like building directional antennas by the time you're six so you can get online so you can listen to music. So difficult to even get music now. Only people who actually have access to music are people in the archaeologies. So all the rest of us have to steal it. And which makes our lives pretty much null and void. People used to have concerts quite openly that anyone could go to. As a matter of fact, there used to be free concerts. Now to go to a concert to actually see something perform live is reserved for the most super elite. But I digress. I gotta tell you about what I learned about Nod. The radio tower worked. See, I had to get online. I had to find a place where I could do some research. And being online, well, I mean, it's still the greatest resource of everything server will provide. So by creating this spike and getting myself all set up, I could, well, get strength of signal, but then I had to... It's kind of interesting because it's kind of like trying to make an old-fashioned chronograph, trying to play compact CDs. It's a bit of a jerry-rig. But luckily, I have adaption ports and things that I use to get me into different systems. It's black market material. Adaption ports are created to, well, specifically for people like me and then the terrorist crowd so that we can access multi-platform systems. It used to be just one type of plugin, and now there's like hundreds of different proprietary ones. Some of them look really neat. Some look like little stars or company logos, and so that they can control what systems you can plug into. I mean, by controlling the physical connection, it's a pretty good way of controlling who has access. But by using the system, by using this particular jack system to get in while you're online, you have no concept of the outside. You have no concept of the world around you. It's a lot like using eyes. I mean, it's the same sort of idea as what eyes evolved into. You got to bear in mind that eyes, as I've discussed before, was the first and second generation of the current browsing program. I mean, you can still browse the old-fashioned way, you know, if you just had a screen and, you know, you're a Puritan and you don't want to jack yourself with anything. I mean, you can still do that. But for those of us who, for those of us that this is a lifestyle, we jumped at the opportunity to immerse ourselves in our home. Of course, it's totally immersive. So if something were to go wrong in the room around you, you're pretty much at their mercy. So another skill you learn at a very early age after you get your implant is how to make trip killers. A trip killer is, the jacks, people have, like, server monks put their jack in the middle of the forehead. And from that jack, it usually goes out to an adapter wire or something to that effect. But the jacks I have are not in my forehead. I have them around the base of my skull. So that when I plug in, it isn't quite so obvious. But the way you make a trip killer is essentially is all, just about every plug in the world has some kind of a securing mechanism, like a lock that you plug it in and it goes click and it locks it in place. Every kind of jack has that, every kind of plug. So to make a trip killer, what you do is you break that lock off. So the only thing holding that in there is the friction. I mean, usually the locks are on the cables. You don't break off, you know, things on the port, because this would be on the male end of the cable. You crack off your locking mechanism, and so that it can just slide out in and out with you know, any kind of tension or pressure, I mean, bang, it comes out. And then you tie thread, which, you know, everyone keeps with them out here, especially for specifically this purpose. You tie thread to around the cable, and you tie threads to various objects in the room. Like, for example, if you're in a room, you can tie it to a door, or you can tie it to a window, or anything that would be moved if people came into the room. That way, when they come in the room, it pulls on the thread slides out the jack because there's no lock on it, and bang, you're offline. It's a very rude way to get pulled off the web, and a very rude awakening from eyes, but let me tell you, it's a lot better than waking up with your head on a stick and being, you know, gut ripped. So, that's your safety craft corner for the morning. So, I made a bunch of kill trips and hooked them up to doors and to the windows. And I mean, I go a little bit crazy with the kill trips, just out of safety. They do make some, it should be noted, I don't have one, but they do make an aftermarket, kill trips that are actually cameras. You can put the camera outside and it takes a picture, and if anything moves inside of that frame, it transmits a signal inside to another machine, which is essentially just an electric little reel. So the machine, if it gets a signal, the reel kicks in and pulls on the thread and tears out your jack. I should pick up one of those, but I can only carry so much stuff, you know? I mean, there's not enough, the way I lose stuff and have stuff taken away and given to me, I would be surprised if I could keep it for too long. It's crude, but it works. There's a leather chair in here that I used to make my last transmission, and that would be my cradle. That's my pilot's chair to go online. So I set it up, hooked all the wires out, set up my drip killers, and I went online. There's few things as exhilarating as going online. There's few things as addictive, even in the pharmaceutical and chemical world of today, that can touch being online. I mean, ever since the inception of the internet, the ability to browse the web and to cruise around, meet people, gather information was just an unbelievable power. Back in the very beginning, everything was done from a text-based interface. I mean, it was just, you know, this little white letters on a black screen, you know, command line. Everything was just there, and you had to know your passwords. I mean, it was about as user-friendly as a porcupine. It was just horrible. And this led to a gradual development, the implementation. Humans are very visual creatures. We live in a visual world. Everything around us is based on all our senses, not just one. Well, not all the senses I have, not all the senses of a dread man, but a lot of the senses. Of course, I have the other question of what if trees or rocks or animals, if I could somehow get myself to listen to their electromagnetic frequencies. I don't know, I'll have to try that. Anyway, sorry. Ever since the beginning, man's tried to make browsing the web, that world we have created, that method of speaking, a lot more visual. The internet itself, like the web, I mean, there's a lot of people who spend a lot of time philosophizing about what the web is. You know, is it just a... is there no web, or is it just locations? And then there's avenues in which to connect them. Is that what the web is? In that case, there is no web. It's just locations and the ability to connect between each one. But I think it's more than that. I think it's... the web is like a giant conversation. And it's not what I'm saying, and it's not what you're saying. It's that space between us where the information travels. It's that zone of dialogue that we create. That is the web. And so it's in that space. It'd be like, I suppose if I was explaining something to you, as I'm doing now, and I could draw a diagram, you know, like that paper is not part of this conversation. The paper itself is not there. It's not something that is intrinsically part. I mean, my words are part of it, but by using the paper and by drawing diagrams on that paper so that you understand what I mean, that paper becomes part of the conversation. And that, the aspect of using that, makes that, I think, the first time that man used diagrams or art would be the first time that man actually created the internet. It wasn't when wiring was created. It was whenever you could draw a picture or create a symbol that all people would just understand dynamically. The first internet, the first websites, were actually made on cave walls, if you want to trace it to its most basic form. Pretty easy to do. And ever since a child could pick up a stick and draw and create shapes and look at art, they've been creating websites. So in essence, I don't really think that being jacked and wired and getting online and so that you can cruise around the web is necessarily an unnatural thing like the Puritans teach, but I think it's part of us. I think it's an extension of us. As though it was just as natural as drawing pictures or creating art. The creation of the internet was just, well, a realization. It's an inevitable thing that is probably, well, I mean, if you think about it, all radio frequencies, it's all been coming to this. The urge to communicate. But, yeah. Anyway, where was I? Oh, right. Going online in all its glory. We would, in the beginnings, the graphical user interface that was first created was, well, laborsome. It was a lot like just flipping through a magazine, pictures and whatnot. Then as animations came into play, it became more and more movement-oriented, a lot of fluid motion. So much so that in the beginning stages, they tried to make it more than it was, and it wound up being quite, well, it wound up going the other way. It wasn't friendly at all. It was confusing. So there's a few attempts at making a virtual reality browser, but nothing really came to pass because they were still using a screen. You had to get off the screen. You either had to do it with a helmet or you had to get inside. And that's where eyes came into play. That's where the ability to use a browser with eyes is amazing. Whenever you go online, I was really nervous about going online, by the way, because of all my Dreadman hardware. I had no idea how the Dreadman hardware inside my head would interact with being online. I mean, yeah, it works with me here in the real world, but what happens when I'm online? Does it, will it keep going? Will it pick up rogue signals while I'm online? Will it affect how I browse? Luckily, it doesn't. It seems the Dreadman hardware, it's keeps me away from being online. Keeps me away from, hallucinating in my digital state. In any case, I was online. I managed to get in there and prepare to surf. When you're first online, this is a they call it surfing. It should be called singing, not surfing. But you see, when you first jack in your, there's a lot of people where you, a lot of places you set as your home with eyes. You log in and it looks as though you're in a box, like a cardboard box or any kind of a box with no top on it. Like somebody just took the lid off of an old shoebox or something. You're looking up and there's the sky. Now inside the box, there's different tools and things like that you can use. It's, usually people have, it doesn't travel with you. You leave that box, but that's a method to, well, come back there and look at the outside world. A lot of people have cameras set up that they can look out at their actual real world surroundings. See what's near them. I, again, because of limited space, can't carry all the cameras and stuff to set my box up the way I like, but I was online. That's all that mattered. Now, interestingly enough, as the ability to browse became more and more graphical, it was a lot like, they called it surfing, like I said. Now, it's changed. The way eyes has taken it is it takes into account the wires you travel on, the speed of your connection, how well it works, your how many routers you travel through, how many hops it has to do, everything. And it interprets that data into a visual interface. It interprets it into a stream so that it, as you are approaching the site, as the site is loading, you're flying usually at terrific speeds, especially if you've got a really solid connection. And I don't mind saying that the connection I built out here was pretty solid. So once I began using my search string mantra, the search string mantra is a, whenever you're looking for, they used to have a search string that you would use, but a search string mantra, since it's used with eyes, is something that you would chant in order to find it. And your body flies based on your mantra. It's kind of hard to explain. More like typing. It's not really like typing. It's a lot like, as I said before, it's like singing a song. You don't really think about what's coming next. You kind of get lost in the aspect of singing. I mean, in the beginning stages, when you haven't sung it before, you're very awkward. You don't know what you're doing. You kind of work your way through it. But as you travel, as you fly, you stay focused on your mantra, and you cruise along at very high speeds, and you'll always see things as you go. You'll travel down, but the song has to stay in your mind so that you let your body travel to where it has to be. You can change your mantra, of course, but you want to get to a few different locations first before you do that. Otherwise, well, you'll just wind up, you won't get anywhere. You'll just spin out of control. So it's not, I mean, I suppose there's not much difference between the amount of time it would take to navigate with eyes than it is the amount of time it would navigate back. Well, back in the early days. Back in the early days, it was, when you think about how much time it takes once, you know, high-speed connections were created, the web kind of evolved with it, so the websites had more information on them. Well, nothing has changed. Eyes interfaces are, you know, huge amounts of data have to be created, so it's about the same amount of time. So your flight time is about the same. It doesn't seem like much, and, well, as they say, getting there is half the fun a lot of the time. Most people, when they get their eyes interface for the first time, they spend all their time cruising around the web, and they're not really looking for anything. As a matter of fact, the last thing they want to do is arrive at a website. They just drift back and forth in this high-speed channel of thought. It's quite cool. So I started my search string mantra and felt my body lift away and travel upwards and out. The first thing I searched for was the Kingdom of Nod, the actual, anything on the Kingdom of Nod, and it took me to some mostly biblical references. I was on top of a mountaintop and watched this guy, you know, kill his brother, which was various different angles. It's surprising how incredibly graphically violent people can get about the Bible. I've seen depictions of the Bible that are just borderlining on pornographic. And, that particular case, I guess Cain and Abel were these two brothers, and one brother killed the other and tried to hide it from this god, and, well, God found out about it because, you know, he's a god, and banished one brother to the Kingdom of Nod and cursed him and marked him so that he would be wander the earth forever. Kind of an interesting scenario. And I wonder if that's why the Dread Man chose Nod. I mean, if you think about it, I was trying to figure out, because there's always references, you know, there's always reasons why, always tie-ins. Why did the Dread Men choose Nod to make a Kingdom of Nod? You know, what does that have to do with? Is this a Dread Man related thing? I don't know. But it seemed to me that it would be. See, Dread Men are created, well, by, you know, God. So their creator was essentially man. They were turned into these freaks, these digitally traveling creatures. They were able to be aware, a lot like Adam and Eve. They were just, you know, kind of normal people, unaware, until they had were given, well, they took the fruit of knowledge. And then suddenly they were aware of everything that went on around them. They were aware of all this information that was previously kept from them. And so the powers that be became angry with them. And they cast them away. They cast them away from the perfect military society that they'd created. And cursed them to wander. There's a biblical reference there. Also, they were created, and once became aware, they turned on their brethren. They didn't want to be controlled anymore. And they turned so violently that they killed their brethren. And so with this mark, which was already given to them, they were cursed to wander. I mean, this is all just supposition. I don't know what it, if that's accurate, but it's interesting. And I usually find that drawing artistic conclusions about things like that generally can serve you. Especially when dealing with, well, Dreadmen. They're rather an artistic lot. There's so many authors and images that were related to the actual reference to the lands of Nod. There was a place called Nod that was somewhere in the Middle East. And I don't want to go over there. I mean, there's... holy crap. If I was to wind up in the Middle East, I mean, I don't even know if that... There's areas in the Middle East you can't even walk. The entire Holy Land is... well, it's radioactive. You walk into the Holy Land now, you'll meet God, all right. There's so many toxic spills and radiation wandering around that spot, your skin would probably rot off your bones inside of 3 days. It's a dangerous place to be. So I tried different, well, additions to my mantra. I was trying to add in Dreadmen to the Kingdom of Nod. And I heard a chirp. Well, like a... I got a hit, you know. I felt myself be pulled. And as, again, when you're searching, you have to be very aware of different ways your body drifts. And then you encourage that drift. So I was searching, and I came upon a location. I was being pulled towards an area. But it was near inside of a place known as the House. And I was cruising through the web. And I was heading somewhere. I was moving at good speed because there's always an easy transition. You can always tell when you've been stopped because it's a slow start and a slow finish. So it's no jarring. But if you get stopped, if access is forbidden to a zone, it's just you're traveling along and it's like you hit a wall, you know, smack. And that's what happened. I was cruising along and looking at the light and sounds and passing sights. The flight through it. And all of a sudden... there was a wall in front of me with this octagon door made, which looks like slats of steel. And it was just, wham, it was there. It just jumped out of nowhere. And there was just there was a brass plate outside the door that said the House. And I realized that this must be some sort of information haven. But, I mean, this wasn't a server monk location. And because, I mean, you can always tell server monks look like giant glowing balls of light. And they readily, you know, allow anyone in there. And it wasn't a corporate location because the corporate locations look like, well, a corporate location. There's always, you know, banners and advertising propaganda, the usual thing. This was something else. This was this stone wall with just... a brass plate that said the House. So it must have been some kind of data haven. So I submitted a query. Queries is like an instant messaging protocol that was adopted into IIS. There's many different ways to do it. Many different ways you can try to do it. I just took the easy one where I just shout. It's like you're yelling at a wall or something. Some folks have ones that look like ornate letters they can actually write by hand and leave at a location or whatever. But for me, just for the sake of speed, I just, you know, shouted it out. I go, hello, my name is independent dynamic librarian Sean Kennedy VI. I need to talk to you about your knowledge that you have on the Kingdom of Nod. I need to know about, well, anything. I don't have anything. I'm looking for the Kingdom of Nod. I was sent this way by a Mr. Weaver from New Rome. Does any of this mean anything to you? I was all met by silence. Which, I don't even know if the site was manned anymore. I mean, who knows? So I said my piece and waited for a few moments in case there was someone monitoring it. Someone holding the line, but there was quite a long pause. And I was going to leave. I just started to change my thoughts, and I thought, well, you know, I'll just do the search thing mantra again. When the door opened. Just like that. Bang. Swung open, which was odd. It was very, very odd. There was no login, no pass, nothing. It just, I was given access after this instant message. But being inside the site, your speed was limited and you couldn't take anything. It was a lot like having your wings clipped. That's a very serious, you have to understand that the slang term for it is having your wings clipped. It's a very, very expensive procedure to do that online because, most people, when they navigate with eyes, what you see all around you is there for you to take. It's very hard to regulate that just because of the nature of the program itself. But this location could do what the corporations could not. It created a method of use so that you had to walk through it and you couldn't pick anything up. You could just sort of look at things and you couldn't really take it with you. It was an amazing piece of design. I don't know who had done it, but it was it was definitely security related, and I didn't know, you know, what. I'd never seen it before. I'd heard of it, but this is the first time I'd ever encountered it. And when I realized I couldn't fly and I had to walk, that made me a little nervous. But it also meant that I was probably on my way to the right location. Or I was on my way to a trap. I mean, there are those that hunt librarians online. It's not really smart to do because, well, we usually have more tricks than they do, but once I got through the doorway, I was worried. I wasn't worried anymore. Past the wall was this junkyard, this huge scrap heap of data, images, and shadows of what used to be on the web, different echoes that had sounded through time, only leaving a digital trace. It was amazing. All these memories and efforts and art laying everywhere. Things that people would just delete and send forever into the vastness of server, but they were here. It was like this. This was the data that God had forgotten. This was the data that even server didn't care about, but it was all here in huge heaping piles of trash. In different areas, it was illuminated by fire. These currents that lit the junkyard up. It was, I suppose it was kind of beautiful in a creepy kind of way. But after walking for what felt like an hour, the junkyard was all I could see around me, and I just kept wandering through this junkyard. It was hard for me to stay focused because I wanted to look at all this different data, all this information that was laying around in strange piles. There's some kind of an arrangement here, but I could be damned if I could figure out what it was. It was just data stacked sloppily. I imagined about 3/4 of the way through that this person must be some kind of librarian as well. Most data havens are very, very well organized, but not this one. It was too huge. I mean, perhaps underneath all these stacks of data was, you know, some sort of organizational system in the beginning, but this had been around for a long time. I was seeing traces of stuff since before the listener's license. I was looking at data that just existed forever. Old websites. Websites that didn't even have, you know, an eyes interface. It just looked like a cube with different pages on each side. It was just amazing, the data that was in here. I just kept heading towards the center, and there was a clearing surrounded with, well, larger heaps than the rest. It created like a, almost a courtyard. And sitting in this bizarre-looking chair was a very, very old, old man. Now, avatars are interesting things. Avatars are your representation of yourself online. Like, you could, generally, in the beginning, when people started to go online, they look like birds or animals or things like that. Or they would create the atypical buff guy who was attractive, or the woman with the long flowy hair and the large breasts and all the rest of it. But that kind of gave way to a more honest approach where people wanted to look like themselves, because eyes was real. It was considered to be kind of immoral to not show what you looked like in the real world. I mean, there's little things you would do, like to, if you had acne and stuff, you would clear that up or what have you. But it was quite often people would be well-dressed, or they would look what they thought was, you know, desirable. It would be how they wanted to look in the real world, but couldn't. Now, the odd thing was, the way that's achieved, okay, you got to understand, is they take digital scans of you, and then that's fed in. It used to be an expensive procedure, but now it's nothing. And you would alter it. But to see someone ugly, to see someone who was old and decrepit, was never, it just didn't happen. Unless they really didn't care about what other people's impression of them were. And sitting in this chair by this fire, this bonfire, was this old man. His wrinkles were so deep in his face that it seemed as though he was cracking. At any moment, gray skin would fall off in hulks. His hair was long and patched white wisps, like someone had dropped spider webs on top of his head. And it looked as though he was sleeping. I could barely distinguish where the patches in his face, where his eyes would open, would come. But as I approached, his eyes opened, and his face moved, and I could see these black, beady, ancient eyes surrounded with the yellow whites looking out at me.
"So, you've come,"
he said after his eyes focused in on me.
"You've finally returned to where things began, haven't you?"
I said, "I'm sorry, I'm not exactly sure what you mean. I'm looking for information on the Kingdom of Nod. I have to go there. I have to find something known as X in the Kingdom of Nod. I was sent there by Mr. Weaver. Do you know anything about where the Kingdom of Nod is, or what it is, or what X might be? Anything at all would be helpful. And I'll leave you in peace. I don't mean to bother you."
"Well, there's something there in the Kingdom of Nod. You want to know about the Kingdom of Nod, Sean? I'll tell you. There's so much data floating around. There's so many forbidden things, but don't you ever wonder where it comes from? Don't you ever want to know where all of these viruses and plagues, the black magic, what they call the Ubia, don't you want to know where that comes from? Don't you ever wonder where all the evil things that lurk in the corners of cyberspace? Don't you ever think about that?"
To be honest, I hadn't thought of that before, but that was an interesting concept. Where does all the dark, where do all the dark programs and viruses and worms and Trojans, where do they all come from? Most of them, the corporates claim, are created by us, but, well, the terrorists, but they hurt us, so why would we attack ourselves? It doesn't make sense. And the corporations aren't making them, as was the conspiracy. So, where do they come from? The old man had my attention.
The Kingdom of Nod has moved through time. It's in many locations. But I know now where it is. I know where it's currently resting, Librarian. Yes. Do you know about occult tech? Have you come across such a thing in your travels?
I hadn't, and I told him as much. I had no idea what occult tech was. I'd never even heard of the term.
Well, I guess you're not so smart after all, are you? You see, occult tech is technical data, which is occult in nature.
At first I didn't understand what he meant, but then it became clear to me. Occult tech data, which is occult in nature. You gotta understand that occult, the word occult doesn't necessarily mean magical. The word occult actually means hidden. So all things hidden from back in the time of the Crusades, the church would decree that anything that was had to do with nature or the laws of the old religions was occult. It was had to become occult because it had to be hidden from the Crusaders, from these people destroying all this information. So occult tech is knowledge that corporations, which are the new religion, have decreed to be unholy. So in essence, those of us who, well, who distribute and have this knowledge become, well, occultists, those who explore the esoteric and hidden world of knowledge. I'd never put the two terms together before, but to hear what other people in the past would call black ice or black ops or shadow programs, in essence, all of these things could be grouped into occult tech. That's what the occult tech was. It hit me like a bomb. My eyes widened and you could see that I understood.
You must go. You must find the immorality zone. You must go to the area that was known as New Orleans. In there, in the immorality zone, is where you will find the resting place now of the Kingdom of Nod. You must hurry. It's been there some time, but time is a funny thing. It shifts so constantly. You should go quickly. Get there as fast as you can. Good luck, Librarian. I hope you can find X.
The immorality zone of New Orleans was a they used to have a party there called Mardi Gras. It was an area in the United States where people would go and get drunk and engage in all manners of craziness. It was like a steam blow-off area. This is back before the time of New Rome. And as the war started, there was a lot of different insurgencies. There was a lot of different factions of power that came into being in different states. New Orleans became taken over by a really radical moral majority. And they deemed that all of New Orleans couldn't be corrected, so they let these people have their immorality zone. It wasn't a prison as such, but it was a place that people could go. It'd be like if you found a child eating cookies when he wasn't supposed to, and you forced the child to eat cookies until he was sick. This is what the immorality zone was designed to be. Not only was it allowed to be immoral, it was encouraged to be immoral. So the sickness of the area would be visible to anyone who's visit that. So if you had people who wanted to go and party and have a good time, they would be forced to take that to an extreme, to areas where rape was not really a crime, it was considered a sport, things of that nature. New Orleans became an immorality zone, and the largest of the immorality zones. And that was where this old man told me that the Kingdom of Nod was currently residing, a moving kingdom. In a strange way, it made sense. I turned and began to head back the way I came. I shouldn't have asked, but I had to know. I wondered if this was the way I'd end up. I reached the edge of the clearing and I looked back at him over the fire and I said, "What's your name?" His ancient face opened up with his eyes again. And he said to me,
You can call me Wingnut. You can call me Mr. Wingnut."
And he smiled to himself, as though it was some kind of private joke. I walked out of the junkyard and made my way back. Now I had a location, but he said I had to hurry. The minute I cleared past the wall, I focused on returning to my home. I was back at the box in a matter of seconds. I jacked out. That was it. That was all I needed to get online and to get where I needed to go. As quickly as I could, I packed up. And, I'm about to take off right now. I figured I should make a transmission before I head out. I hope you realize that by going to the immorality zone, how dangerous that's going to be, especially the immorality zone. The area of New Orleans is hardly the kind of place that anyone should go voluntarily. But I know there's old highways that are still open. I know there's roads that are still intact that a lot of the runners use. And that'll be the route I go. I'll send another transmission as soon as I can, but until then, now you know what's happening. So this is Independent Librarian Dynamic Sean Kennedy VI, doing a private broadcast of episode number 732.653.663.398.36.16 in Queen's English from sometime after now. Please give this message to others, so that they can prevent what's coming. And in doing that, you'll help me. Please. Please help me.
Hi there, this is Sean Kennedy. If you liked this episode of Tales from the Afternow, and you'd like to download the others for free, you can do it at www.theafternow.com. If you'd like to support Tales from the Afternow, you can make a donation there as well. Thank you.